Hello everyone and welcome to the 31st episode of the Molly Talk podcast. I'm really excited because this is the first ever in-person interview that I'm doing, and it's not just with anyone but with Misty May Trainer. Woo! So Misty, did you know that today is Olympic Day?
I didn't know it's Olympic Day, but it's also a big celebration of Title IX. Women's
sports. Oh, really?
Yeah, the movement.
Cool. So,
and it's a celebration. This is a birthday. This is going to be our anniversary always, me and you.
Aww. So, yeah. Olympic Day is going to be our anniversary.
Yeah, because this is the first time you've done a live show.
That's true. So, you know, thank you so much for joining me today. It's really such an honor to be able to interview you. I'm like super nervous right now, if you can't tell. But yeah, we have so many things to talk about, and so, you know, I'm sure watching the recent World Championships brings back a lot of memories for you, having won 3 consecutive championships in a row from 2003 to 2007, right?
I actually had to go back and look. I'm not good with numbers. So I had to go back and look, and I was like, I think we won World Championships, and then I was looking, I was like, oh, 3, 5, 7, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then I had to look at our second place trophy.
The one in 2011.
I looked at that second place trophy, but that second place led to a gold medal.
Exactly.
But no, the World Championships, I'm hoping one day that I can get my family there to experience it. Because from traveling the world, there's a lot of places I've been, but a lot of places I definitely want to go back to. Because as an athlete, you don't, especially if you're doing well in the tournaments, you don't get to see that much. Definitely Gstaad would be one of the stops, but... Mm-hmm. For Talico, it was an amazing venue, and we just came up short, but that's okay, you know, you learn from your losses. But no, World Championships, I was, when I had time to sit down, because just wait, and I'm telling you, wait to have kids, but you will find out that there's just not a lot of time to sit down. But when I did that, I think the Volley TV app or whatever, I was able to tune into different matches, and... there was good volleyball. All the players are so physical. And it was a shame, though. I saw, you know, we talked about this on the phone, but Joanna go down with a shoulder injury. And the interesting thing, Carrie Pothorst, who was a gold medalist Olympian, you know, she was talking, and you never want to see an athlete go down with injuries, but I guarantee you she'll bounce back. It'll make her stronger. To me, something was just weak. But that's just the nature of sport. We go through many injuries, and you know that. But it was always, I'm kind of sad World Championships is over.
It's like such a big event. One of the biggest, right? I heard someone say before that, like, for volleyball players, World Championships is like even bigger than Olympics.
I don't know about that. I'm going to have to know.
We got to check on that one, but yeah.
But no, because it doesn't happen every year. So the stakes are a little bigger. Prize money, if you guys looked at the results, the prize money is a little larger. And everybody wants that world champion, you know, ship. I feel like it was the last World Championships, whoever won got an automatic bid, I think, into the Olympic Games.
Yeah, and I think
that didn't, that wasn't happening when we were playing. They still based it on points, but so I'm not sure. I didn't hit the earlier matches, so I'm not sure if that's still what the stipulation is. If Duda and them would get a
automatic,
I'm not sure.
Olympics,
But great playing, and you young athletes out there, if you had a chance to watch or go back, pick apart some of the players' games.
For sure. So, you know, you're considered as one of the most successful beach volleyball players to ever play this sport. You were inducted into the Volleyball Hall of Fame in 2016. But I want to rewind to the very beginning. Like, when was the first moment that you stepped onto a volleyball or beach volleyball court and started playing?
I think if my mom could have given birth at Santa Monica Pier, she would have given birth at the pier. In fact, we're headed, she's getting inducted Saturday, so my dad are headed down there for Santa Monica Pier Beach Hall of Fame. But from the time I could walk, even when I couldn't, I was down at Santa Monica, the beach in Santa Monica, because that's where I grew up, and my parents owned a pizza stand. So I remember going around, and, you know, my parents would roll a ball across the sand, and I'd go get it, and then bring it back. So I had a lot of great times down in Santa Monica. And we didn't move to Orange County until 8th grade.
Mm.
So that's a lot of years in LA. And then I played in my first tournament with my dad when I was 8 years old.
Oh!
And I got to play. I was just, I had just found a picture of Wilt Chamberlain.
Mm-hmm.
You know Wilt Chamberlain? Best basketball players. And he would come down to Santa Monica Pier and play, and I found a picture of him, and it's him sitting in a beach chair just lounging. And I used to play big games with him and play.
Whoa.
And our big games were 6-on-6, and he'd go down there and play, and
uh-huh.
I got to rally with him. So, so I was a little munchkin walking around on Santa. If I wasn't playing soccer, dancing, everything else.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I remember reading in your book that you said the Santa Monica Pier was like a place where like everyone from different backgrounds would just come and play, and you would just play with them, and that's where you got one of your first few volleyball experiences.
And what was neat was back then, it doesn't happen now. I haven't found a place yet that this happens, and it's very discouraging, but they used to have paper stapled to the poles. And even when we moved to Orange County in 8th grade, at Huntington, they had papers stapled to the poles, and they'd have workup courts. So you'd go down and you'd pencil, there's a pencil, and you'd write your name, and it could be like a list of 10. And they might have a second court going, and if that team on the second court won, then they'd move up, and then
mm-hmm.
a new team would take over on second, and you had to win to stay on.
Mm-hmm.
And you could pick, if I just lost and it was my, or let's say I just lost the match before, and it was Joe's turn to play, then he could pick me up and
even though I just lost
because it was individual signups, and
mm-hmm.
so that's what made it fun, because you got all different players, all different abilities being able to play. Now it's very cliquish, right? People go down there like, oh, we have our foursome, you can't
mm-hmm.
play, you know. So I like when it was open, and
mm.
I feel like that developed my game, because you saw so many different things.
Mm.
You'd be playing against a 7-year-old, and you're a teenager. You could be playing against a pro and get your nose rubbed in it. So,
wow, that's
and you had to win to stay on, so incentive.
That's what built the mentality of the champion mentality. So, who or what inspires you the most along this journey?
Oh, everyone. I mean, growing up in Santa Monica inspired me. I felt I was saw some of the best players in the world. Not that I would know at that time, because I was very young, but best players in the world. But both my parents inspired me and, you know, helped that journey along the way. And, you know, my mom is no longer with us, but I know she watches over us. And my dad's still, he's 80 and still going. I would like him to relax. So, Dad, if you're listening, maybe just take a little relaxation, take a break. But he's still going. He's still coaching.
Mm-hmm.
He loves the game so much. So those would be my two inspirations.
Mm-hmm. Your parents, yeah, for sure. And, I mean, we can all, those who of us who have trained with Misty and Butch, this is just so much fun to have them around. So,
she's lying.
No, I'm not. So, what were some of the most memorable moments throughout your journey?
I mean, I always like the training. People, I think some of the most, like the best memories
mm-hmm.
were always training. It's when you want to puke, when you want to give up, when you want to cry, when you're so frustrated, you want to kick the ball, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it drives you to that point. But that's where you find out more about yourself, is in all the training. Competing, I love seeing the world. I don't miss packing a suitcase and being on the road for like 3 or 4 weeks. But I miss seeing my friends that I met in different countries.
Mm-hmm.
I miss seeing different cultures and, you know, learning about different areas in the world, traveling and seeing the world. I wish more people had the opportunity, because it really opens your eyes to and things and makes you appreciate things
mm-hmm.
more. I miss the fans coming out and interacting with the fans.
Mm-hmm.
But my mom got to see me play in Sydney, so that was one of the highlights. And that was the only Olympics she got to see me in. And obviously winning the 3 gold medals, obviously winning the first one, that's the first one for USA Women's Volleyball.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to repeat, you know, two more times after that.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. And
yeah,
if you had wood here, I'd knock on it, but I'll just do this.
Wood.
But I feel, I don't know if it'll ever be broken. 3 gold medals in a row.
Mm.
It's very rare you find teams last that long together and have that type of partnership. So, I mean, I'm hoping it doesn't get broken because I think it's a very
special
special feat we did and just we worked so hard for it. But yeah, all those things are so special.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And like, if like you just think about it, like 3 Olympics means 4 times 3, which is like at least 12 years of being there and like being at the top shape. So yeah, like sometimes I just think about it, I'm just like mind blown all the time.
You should be mind blown because you're young athletes. I don't know, we gotta work on the mental side.
Yes.
But to stay at the top for 12 years was amazing because the target gets bigger and bigger every year, and it's the mental aspect. Obviously, the physical aspect's super important, mm-hmm. but as you get older, that'll break down. I'm going to be honest. My physical broke down. There's athletes that were more physical heading into Beijing and London, but mentally, I felt we were the strongest pair.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one thing I feel lacking in today's game. Everybody's got the physical.
Yeah.
It's that mental side. And you don't have to overthink. You don't have to overthink it, you know. But you just got to have fun what you're doing, and just you can't overanalyze. And I don't think we did that. I don't think we overanalyzed too much, but we enjoyed the process. You have to enjoy the process. Don't get lost in the process, but enjoy it and really understand what's going on. But yeah, the mental side.
Yeah, we'll get to that more later because there's a lot of things I want to ask you about that. So for now, the next question is, what has been the toughest challenge that you had to face, and what lesson did it teach you?
Toughest challenge, I think was, well, there's a couple. My dad told me to be a champion, and it can be lonely at the top. And I didn't quite understand what that meant, because I just enjoyed doing the extra weights or working out extra. But that's what he was talking about, is if you want to be the best, it's lonely at the top because you're the one doing the extra work while everybody's maybe at a movie or take a vacation or going to the beach or, you know, not taking the extra time. So that can be difficult, is knowing, and I'm not even calling it sacrifice because it's a choice that I've made, that I want to be the best. So these are the choices that aligned with what I wanted to happen. But that's where people, I think, fall out, is you're training when the lights are out. No one's there. You're not going to get an award for every rep that you do extra, you know, you're just, but it will, you'll see the benefit. So training, it being lonely at the top, that's something, I think a lot of people have to overcome. Two was a death of my mom. Hit bottom, you know, and I'm not going to. Took a nosedive, and it's hard when you lose somebody that has helped your career or done so much for you. It's like part of your heart dies, right? And you never gain that. So that was hard, and a lot of us, we have to hit bottom before we head up, and I definitely hit bottom with bad choices and not taking care of myself, and then shot back up and really focused on knowing she's here, because I believe in that. I believe in energies, and people are looking down on us, and using that more as a positive and working for her as opposed to poor me and just living in a, you know, a hole. And then many injuries, you know, you've come back from injuries, Tosh, but I've had knee injuries and Achilles and shoulder,
stomach,
ab injuries. And I think what helped me with that, instead of saying why me, it was what can I do to get back. So taking the thought process a little different. So, and I think all athletes deal with this. I mean, everybody, that's why we're all unique. We're not all the same people. We all deal with different things in our lives, and it's how you use that energy.
Yeah,
in a goal-minded way.
Right? Yeah, more on injuries later, another topic that I want to ask you. But yeah, thank you for the answer. That was really good. So now I want to move on to the best ever questions, Misty. So which is the best ever match that you have ever played?
So I've talked to you about this, I think, in practice. And I said, I've never had the best ever match. Like, I can't physically say, like, oh, everything aligned and connected.
Really?
I think as an athlete, you want all your skills, all your preparation to align for that one moment in time. But I can't say all my skills have been on at one point.
Really?
You know? Defense is off, then maybe my offense is on. Offense off, defense is on, you know? And that's the beauty of working with a team, is because you can lean on each other. So I would love to say, like, I can't physically say I've had the perfect game.
Oh.
You know? But with what I had at that time, I made it work.
Interesting. Because, you know? Like, every game I watch you play is, like, the perfect game.
No, it's not perfect. Because I do make mistakes, but it's how do you fix that mistake after it happens? Or, you know, what adjustments? I think I'm pretty... I feel like I'm pretty good at adjusting.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't... So my mistakes maybe became a little more limited because I made adjustments.
Mm. So do you think this adjusting has to do with the mental side that you were talking about earlier?
I think so. Learning the whole game, feel confident in your whole game as opposed to only working on certain aspects of your game and being a little weary of other points. I think if you become a complete player, think the game, not become a robot, you start to analyze, you know, you analyze. Mm-hmm. Plus two, all coaches hate me. That's fine. I still believe in multi-sport athletes, so.
Yeah.
And I can tell as a coach when players play multiple sports because that adjustment happens faster because they've read different angles, whether it's the tennis court, basketball, you know, and their movement patterns.
Mm-hmm.
But preparing allows you to adjust. Mm-hmm. Right? You want to over-prepare. I don't call it over-prepare, but prepare to the best of your ability.
Yeah.
So that you have everything for that situation.
Mm, that's true. So, which is the best ever team that you have played against?
The best ever team. But, whoa, I'm going to go back to the best match.
Though. Okay.
The best match. I don't know. It was the scariest match. But I'll say probably the best comeback match would be that China. I didn't even know we were down.
The Olympic?
The Olympic.
Oh, the semifinals.
Even, yeah, I watched playing that. In the now, didn't even know we were down by that much. So I would say the best comeback.
Uh-huh.
Kind of everything fell in line
mm-hmm.
to allow us to be able to chip away at those points and come mm-hmm. back.
Do you remember that one ball where you dug it to the net and carried
it? Oh, yeah. But we practice. That's volleys, right?
Uh-huh.
That's volleys.
Yeah.
It's being confident that you can put the ball over mm-hmm. and knowing in your mind, like, I've done this before, I can do it.
Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, the second question, which is the best ever team that you have played against?
Best ever team? Oh, gosh, those Brazilians. You Brazilians are tough. So I think the Brazilians are one of our toughest opponents. Just their skill base is really good. And then, you know, whenever you play a team with a left-hander, it's always tough.
Mm.
Because we didn't... I feel like there's more left-handers on tour. I saw Italy has two left-handers, I think, on one of their teams.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we don't see left-handers very often. So right there, you're already up like 2 or 3 points because it's like, oh, you're left-handed. So anytime we play a left-hander, that's a tough adjustment for a lot of players.
How much of a difference does it make?
You just don't see it very often.
Oh.
So the contact point, you know, where the ball's... Mm-hmm. getting hit from.
Yeah.
So.
Lefty's advantage.
You're at least good for 2 or 3.
So what about the best ever venue that you have competed in?
I'm not the only one to say this. I love Gestad.
Oh yeah, a lot of people have said that.
Gestad. And then they used to have a tournament in Klagen for Austria.
Some people have said that too.
Amazing. And then the World Championships in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Feistiest crowd, so there's nothing like playing in Brazil.
Ooh.
So also, if you're listening to this, they line up nice and early. They're dancing the whole time.
Oh.
And Brazil has some of the best crowds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we see that always, like when they do the live stream.
Oh, yeah.
They're just, they have the energy and they just love it. It's like a culture in their country.
I mean, they're out there before the tournament's even open and they're lined up.
Yeah, that must be so fun. So, what is one team that you would really love to play against, past or present?
Past or present that I really love to play against? Just because I really analyzed her game and I loved it so much was Shelda Adriana. And I had, you know, obviously I was fortunate enough when I was a rookie to come up and be playing against him. I even got to play against Jackie Silva, who, for those who don't know, is like up there. She's like,
she won the
volleyball.
First Olympic
volleyball
medal,
just
right?
Amazing.
Yeah.
So Audrey, I would say I'd love to play Adriana Shelda again. Those were always
again?
Battles. And then, you know, there was I'm telling you, it's all the Brazilians. Juliana Larissa.
That's interesting. I like how you're going back to all your, like, toughest opponents in the, like, beginning of your...
Yeah, I don't want it easy. No. Nothing was ever easy, so don't... But, yeah, their style and their energy.
So now we're going to move on to some technical questions, like about training, practice, and nutrition. So Misty, I want to ask you, what was your training routine like in different seasons? Like, let's say in season, off season?
So it changed. Obviously, as I got older, recovery became more important. And it always took, if you're an athlete, it took me a while to figure out what worked best for me. I knew I always liked the powerlifting. We did that, and I learned that in high school. I was a high jumper. I felt I got the most out of my vertical with Olympic lifting and box jumps. So I continued that, and even in college, we did that. And I'm only 5'8.5". We had to touch the rim in college. And I was a setter. Or I was a hitter, and then I changed over to setting when I got to college. But it took me a while to figure out between practices and then getting in touch with different trainers and kind of logistics of what worked best for me, what would maximize mine. And it took me a good, I don't even want to say I was in peak performance until like maybe the next Olympics.
Really?
You know, so yeah, because I was getting pretty thin. I didn't understand packing on the weight, and then being able to maintain overseas is very difficult because trying to get that consistency of lifting and you're traveling all the time and playing. And so it took me a while to figure out the best training regimen. When I finally did it, so Carrie and I would go during the year 5 days a week on the beach for 2 hours. So I'd be in the car, I'd drive either to Playa Hermosa, or we practiced 1 year at Emerald Bay. And then from there I'd lift 3 days a week, so like Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I'd lift
after the practices.
After the practices. There were a couple times I did lift before practice, and I felt that that was not good on my body. Even though you maximize in the weight room, but then you have no legs left, you know, for beach practice. Now, if it happened to work out that that was the only time because I had something after, then I'd, you know, I'd communicate with the trainers so they knew, oh, you have practice after this. So you have 2 hours in the sand, 3 days in the weight room, and then usually Tuesday, Thursday, I was doing track workouts or hill workouts. So I'd run and I'd do extra plyometrics and I'd always add in a workout. So it was more speed and conditioning Tuesday, Thursdays. And then you get to work in PT. So a lot of, as I got more towards my veteran status, you know, towards 2012, I was doing less car riding. I found a trainer that was local. So I'd go right from practice, eat lunch, and stay local wherever I was. Because we think driving in the car, that's rest, and it really is not rest.
It's not, it's actually
not, tiring. It's not rest. So for as much as you think like, oh, it's going to take me an hour to get back, and that's ample time, it's, your mind's still going. And then just listening to your body, knowing when you need to rest, really listening to your body. But in 2004, actually in 2004, I tore ab muscles and I started to implement Pilates. I got introduced to Pilates, and Pilates wasn't big when I started. Either was yoga. You didn't really hear too much about yoga, and that's something I wish I would have probably incorporated more.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I'm not very flexible.
Oh.
I'm a strong player.
Yeah.
You know, so even when I get massages, I would never really get worked out after I played for the day. It was like, wait till the end of the tournament, because I ended up, you know, I'd pull something if I was too loose.
Oh.
Yeah, so I like to play tighter.
Okay.
That's something that you learn.
Mm-hmm.
So I implemented Pilates to help lengthen and just work on the inner core muscles, mm-hmm. which I loved. But for, let's say, since like 04 all the way to what, we were in Florida about 6 years, every off season I was in Florida with Matt. So that, okay. So what I gave you was kind of my like in season,
okay.
and I continued with it. And on the mm-hmm. road, we'd lift maybe like twice a week, or, you know, whatever gym you can find.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's a lot of band work,
oh.
but you still continue with the sprints in the sand after practice, and
okay.
we practice daily when mm-hmm. we're on the road. Off season was February to November to February usually.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't touch a ball.
Not at all.
So,
would you do other sports?
Not touching a ball. That was my time to, when we were in Florida, to gain muscle mass. So
okay.
I'd lift 3 days a week and
oh.
do speed and conditioning and do my Pilates.
Oh,
and just
okay.
take a mental break. I think it's
yeah.
important to take a mental break. You know, if sometimes I go to the gym and swim, or, you know, golf. I like golf.
Mm.
And, you know, just do some other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. Don't think you're backsliding, but you're going to be better for it.
Mm.
But yeah, so from November to February was usually our off season.
Okay.
And Matt and I had it together. And for those that don't know, I'm married to a professional baseball player, so we spent a lot of time apart. Sometimes I'd fly in from a tournament, land, I'd be there for 24 hours, let's say Atlanta, wherever he is, and then I'm off to my
oh,
next
no.
tournament. So there was, I think, a couple of years we only saw each other for 2 weeks between February to November.
What?
Yeah. So you can make it work.
Long hashtag long distance relationships do
work.
A lot
of airline miles. But yeah, so definitely the training regimens did
mm-hmm.
calm down, especially with injuries. Don't overdo it. Again, listen to your body. And then with my Achilles, having to learn how to walk again.
Ooh.
Through that, my 80%, which my calf still has, it won't come back, but my 80% is really my 100%. But this is very strong, and your body knows how to navigate. But as I got older, so heading into London, recovery became more important. So
mm.
I wasn't maybe lifting as much, or if I was fatigued, I'd say, I need to take the day off. It's okay to say, I need to take the day off.
Mm. So
just understand when you're fatigued, and not just, oh, I'm just too tired, I don't want to do it.
Yeah. So is day off like a yoga Pilates session, or is just...
So I'd still practice, but maybe... in the weight room, maybe I'd go a little lighter.
Oh.
I'd just be honest, like, I'm tired today. Like, either I'd lift or I'd do a recovery. I'd go in and foam roll.
Oh, okay.
And just stretch,
mm.
you know, just being honest. I'd ice bath. And
mm. Was it ever difficult for you to, like, listen to your body?
I mean, of course, we always want to work through the pain, right? If we're
yeah.
hurt, it's like, oh, we can do this and we'll get through it. I think there's a time and place for it. And that's something you learn as you get older. You learn about how you feel, and you're really in tune with yourself. You start to understand, like, okay, yes, something's not right. I need to back
oh.
off a little bit.
Okay.
Or, you know what, something's not right, but it's not going to bother, and I'll just keep going because
okay.
I got to, you know, I'm going to have to deal with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you just, that's getting more in tune with your body.
So
but
it's...
some days, sometimes... saying everybody, but you know, you guys get a hangnail. It's like, oh, I can't, coach, I can't play today. I got a hangnail. My finger's gonna fall off. I don't know what's wrong. Oh, okay. You know, so there's a difference between going through the pain for, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then just not wanting to do something and using
yeah.
as an excuse.
I see.
And
so,
us coaches, we know. We know.
Watching. So, I think you kind of answered this earlier already, but how did your training evolve over the course of multiple Olympics?
Yeah, just different, and my body weight changed too. I think if you start, I tell all the athletes, start journaling food you eat, how you feel, what your ideal body weight is.
Oh.
Don't let somebody tell you what your ideal body weight is. you know how you feel when you play at a certain weight, right? And you're like, okay, I felt my strongest at this, and I felt like I was going. And so in college, we had to be 12% or below body fat. And then I think my college weight was it was like 140, 145. And then every year, I think it moved up like 10. 140, 145, I would have felt like, so, you know, which I got there one season, on the beach, I just felt like so weak and I couldn't do anything. And that's why it's important to, even if you're traveling, and you're in season, to just continue to kind of do modified lifting throughout to maintain your body weight.
You mean modified lifting as in,
you may not go as heavy as you did here because you're playing, right? You're in a playing phase, but still to go into the gym and do some, like a lifting program,
okay,
to help maintain that body mass. So then it was like the next Olympics, oh, my starting weight would be 155. So I'm in the gym packing on the muscle because I know by the time season rolls around and now I'm lifting twice a week or one day a week on the road, now I'm at 150, you know?
So
So my last Olympics, I started at 165. So you can see it kind of evolve. But again, I knew playing and I knew when I was working out, gosh, I'm out of shape or I need to lose a couple pounds. I didn't need somebody telling me like, hey, you need to do this, you know? And that's, like I said, don't look at your scale. You know, when you feel like the best and you're like, wow, I feel strong. I'm jumping higher. I feel like I'm moving fast. And you know, kind of analyze that, take it in and say, wow, okay, I'm 167. That's a great playing weight for me, you know?
Okay.
Instead of somebody saying, you need to be 148. It's like, well, that might be what you think, but that might be too thin for me, you know? So.
And I think this is like a very important topic for a lot of athletes also, especially I think female athletes struggle with body image a lot.
We're all different too. Like I have bigger hips, so I carry it like, and then my shoulders are pretty big. I got big traps. I don't know if you guys. Yep, that's right. Big traps. But I have big traps, and the first part to carry weight is my ab, you know, my stomach. But then I've got bigger hips, and, you know, Carrie is opposite. She's tall and lean, and so her lifting, you might be able to have us do some of the certain lifts, but I'm more like the football player, like loading, and, you know, for her, she needs to stay elongated, you know, and long. So everybody is different. That's why we're all individuals, right? And you can treat us the same at some things in a modified manner, I feel, you know? Because even on squatting, a lot of my weight coaches, I can't get past 90. Never have. Never will. Just, that's just my body type. So they didn't force me to go past 90. Where you hear some coaches, you gotta get lower, you gotta get lower. It's like, well, my body type won't allow me. So they understood that. And like I said, you just, each person you have to treat individually, you know, but collectively as a team, but individually, but make sure they're staying on top of their stuff.
So there's no like one size fit all type of gym program. Everyone has to have a tailor.
I don't think so, because you have maybe certain injuries you've had in the past that if I have you do something, it's like, oh, that might not be beneficial to what we're trying to do. You might have to build certain muscle groups back up that other people don't have to, you know. So I think everybody's tailored. It's like clothes, right? We all need different tailoring.
So true. So, you know, just now we were speaking about injuries and you mentioned about Joanna from Switzerland. She had a horrible injury in the World Championships and we're all wishing her a speedy and full recovery. So, but you yourself had your fair share of injuries too. You said your shoulder, your knee, and even your abs. How do you deal with injuries and what do you focus or work on instead? Because I think that a lot of times when we get injured, I think the biggest fear, like especially for me, is like, oh, I can't come back and like I'm gonna lose out so much. But how do you like work around that?
So I feel like I've always been a pretty positive person. I think that's my dad.
Like, hey, shout out to Butch.
His Hawaiian side just like kind of things will, you know, it'll pan out when it pans out. Like, I think what you said is important. The very first time you say, oh, I can't do that, what happens? No matter whether you're healthy or not, you can't do it. Right? So I always tried to, nobody means to get injured. Things happen and it's just the nature of sport. that's where you have to turn that mindset around. So it's like, okay, this happened. You know what? Maybe there was an imbalance. You know, I hurt myself. I came down wrong. Not a problem. There's always a way to get back. You know, our mind is so powerful. So as soon as you say, I can't, you're going to hold yourself back. But if you say, okay, instead of why me, like, I'm going to come back stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to stay patient, though. Right? The hardest thing when we're injured is to stay patient.
Yeah, I think so.
We want to bounce back right away. Yeah. And that almost inhibits us more.
Oh.
Stay patient. Listen to your doctors. You have to do all those menial little exercises to help balance you out. And then you get back to play and you find out you're stronger than you were.
Oh.
But I always said, instead of the why me, okay, how can I get back out there?
Mm.
And ask questions, right?
Yeah.
But I think for me, not saying why me was the key.
Yeah, so you know? Don't, like, victimize yourself. Yeah.
Whatever happened, it happened at that point. Now it's like, okay, now what are we going to do about it, right?
Mm.
How's our attitude going to affect the outcome?
Yeah, that's very profound. No, I think that's, like, really good because I think, like, when people get injured, the first response is always like, oh my god, like, why did it happen to me? Like, it always happens to me. And
we don't know, you know?
Yeah.
It could have been a life lesson. Like I said, there's something, maybe it's to teach you patience. Maybe it's to teach you to slow down. Maybe it's to give your body a break. Like, I ruptured my Achilles. I just come off of the Olympic. It could have happened in our last match.
Yeah.
Why didn't it happen in our last? I don't know. So instead, I was like, well, I guess my body's telling me to take a break, right?
Mm.
And then I ended up coming back.
Yeah. So, but how is the comeback process? Like,
it's slow.
Yeah.
Depends on your injury, right?
Yeah.
And I think an injury will teach you the patience, if you allow it to. And patience is so key, I think, all sports, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're behind that China game. You're behind. Do you get fiery and, like, get anxious? Or do you slow down and just patiently wait? Patiently take your time and you start to chip away and you know, like, patience, I think, is one thing lacking because everybody wants it now.
Yeah,
I want this jumpsuit. I want it now. Well, let's work on A and then we'll get to B and then we'll get to C and you know, kung fu, right? They teach patience.
Yeah.
Tai chi is like slow moving, but I think all injuries teach us patience, and it's again, too, listening to the professionals, your physical therapist. When they tell you, hey, you can go out and stationary, I mean, just standing still and pass a ball. That doesn't mean you go to practice. Hey, coach, the PT told me I can go and pass balls. Okay, how? Oh, I can. Yeah, it feels fine. I can shuttle back and forth. No, that's not what he said, right? Or they said. It was stationary passing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think everybody getting on the same page. Coaches, kind of, if you're at a certain level, coaches need to be involved with your PT, so there is no miscommunication, because the last thing you want to do is backslide.
Yeah.
When you've come so far and then backslide, because then that becomes a nagging injury that's when you're like, okay, I'm just going to have to work through the pain because it's not going away.
That's true, yeah.
So I think staying patient and just, you can't look at, I'm falling behind. Your teammates have this opportunity to get better. And still, by watching the game, doing mental imagery, lying with your eyes closed, you know, and seeing yourself playing the ball, your little muscles are moving.
Mm.
So there's still so much you can learn from watching and helping at practice. And just...
Yeah, I can attest to that. Okay, so that was a really good answer. Thank you for sharing that. So... now I want to ask more about nutrition. You mentioned just now about, like, journaling. So what nutrition plan has worked the best for you, and what advice would you give to other athletes?
See it, don't eat it. No, I'm kidding. No. I'm kidding. I have a different body type. Believe me. I mean, I had 3 kids, so I'm still working on getting some of the weight off from the twins. And I love my white rice. I love my white rice. I love my coffee. I love my donuts, and maybe when I was burning 2,300 calories, whatever I was, then I could eat kind of whatever I wanted.
Yeah.
And I was very diligent, you know, obviously hydration, But if that brownie was looking at me and it was like, oh, like, I'm not going to starve myself to be like, oh, I can't have that brownie. It's like, okay, maybe I need the sugar, you know? Or, you know, I love meat and steak. I've cut back on the red meat. But, you know, I always enlisted to the knowledge of my trainers that I was with. To just make sure I was getting enough of the proteins and the carbs. I love my sourdough breads. And, but that's why I didn't food journal till later, but just understanding how your body reacts to certain things. So I remember at tournaments, you go to the AVP tent and you can make your sandwich. And I'd play a game and then I was like, oh, I felt just like groggy, you know? And I think it was the bread. Nothing against bread, but, you know, you start to kind of eliminate like what how you feel after eating certain foods. But definitely keeping up with the protein, especially if you're lifting, having shakes, the hydration especially is super important. I don't, and I could be wrong, but I don't think there was ever a game I like cramped in, which you see a lot, you know, when heat happens, the cramping. And that hydration period takes a, you know, a few days. You always prioritize it a few days ahead of time. But I definitely enlisted help, and even till this day, talk to a nutrition. I'm not a nutritionist, so trying to analyze what I'm doing and getting the results, I want a professional to do that. So, but again, when you're young and moving as much as you are, it's like, you want that donut, take the donut, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's that, it's you not taking that, and then you're going to get hungry, and then you're going to eat like 10 of them.
True, that always happens to me. Yeah, so, okay.
But I always, like, when I was in Europe, I loved my schnitzel. I had my restaurants I'd go to every day. I could eat the same meal all the time. Favorite breakfast were in Japan, because I love the white rice. I'd have miso for breakfast. They would have the best thick white bread. And then the European breakfasts are like a, you know, you got your soft-boiled egg and your breads and your meats and cheeses and...
So much good food.
I just had to walk extra. In Europe, we just walk.
Sightseeing, that's the extra walking. Okay, so, Misty, you've been known to always be, you know, a step or two ahead of your opponents. So I want to ask you, how does a volleyball player develop that ability in their game?
I think becoming a student of the game. You have to really study. It's like anything in school. You just can't show up to math class and be like, oh, I'm going to get it. Like, you have to to work outside. And that's why I said Adriana Sheldon taught so much. And, you know, Holly, my first teammate. And just analyzing everybody on the tour. I just loved when I had off time just going and sitting by the court and picking apart the men and the women and saying, wow, look how they block, or that's their movement. But I definitely attribute my one step ahead is to the other sports I played.
Multi-sport.
I played soccer and grew up with my mom's side all playing tennis. So I played basketball, I did track, but I think, you know, between the training and then all the multi-sports, it allowed me to see different angles or how body positions were coming in maybe before.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And yeah, like even for me also, I didn't really play that much sports growing up, so I kind of regret that. Yeah, but like for people, let's say like me, who didn't really have a multi-sport background, so how would you develop that ability?
You have to overtrain speed, right? So like if you're a defender, training at a faster speed than what would happen on the court.
That's what I think,
and that's how I always thought of it. Because there's so many assets, we've had this conversation in practice, that as a defender, what are you doing? Okay, the wind's blowing. Okay, way are they, where's the pass? Oh, where's the set now? How's the hitter coming in? Are they under the ball, over the ball? Then I gotta watch their arm. Are they coming in hard? Are they coming in slow? You know, there's so many different variables. So I tended to overtrain speed. That's why I ran on the track, ran hills, and then a lot of, we call it the star drill, but a lot of drills in the sand, because the last thing you want to do too is worry about your footwork. Right? You want your feet to just take you to the ball. It's not an after. It's not, oh, I got to think, oh, I got to step with my left. No, it should just happen. So learning the footwork, we always said it, right? It's a dance.
Yeah.
So learning and knowing where the lines are, knowing how far your steps need to be to take you in certain directions, being efficient, mm-hmm. all help.
Okay. So, in your opinion, what is the most important quality that a beach volleyball player should have?
I think dedication. I think for anything, right?
Yeah.
You gotta be dedicated and self-motivated. Mm-hmm. Because you don't have the big team surrounding you.
Yeah.
So self-motivation and dedication.
I see. So just now you were speaking about the mind game and the mindset. So how do you train your mindset leading up to an important tournament?
I think just taking it one point at a time. Mm. I mean, we always said take it one point at a time. But different, like I said, my mom passing away, injuries, different things that happen daily or to us that might be traumatizing help build that mindset. So for me, my mom's passing, time became short, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of time, and you got to make the most of that time. Mm-hmm. And then here I am, I'm able to compete and do something that nobody, like, I'm sure she wishes she could, or even my dad would say to play for those that can't. Yeah. There's a lot of people in different situations that either don't have the opportunities, either physically, mentally, or, you know, just live in places they're not able to.
Yeah.
So you play for those that can't, mm-hmm. because you only get this one time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you just make the best of it. And I think that helped prepare me, because every tournament, for as big as it was or small, it was like, at the end of the day, it's a sport, right? Somebody's gonna win, somebody's gonna fall short.
Yeah.
Am I gonna die? Probably. I hope not, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's things far worse. So I always kept it in perspective that way, which I think helped. Mm. And I think a lot of players put so much anxious, yeah. like, oh, if I don't do this, the sponsor's not gonna, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of just enjoying it, and that's why I said enjoy the process, enjoy, play for yourself, right? Play, you know, and things fall into place. You know? Because if you're always searching for something, you're gonna continue to search. It's like, just enjoy the space you're in now, play, and things will fall into place. So, like, even sponsors, everybody's worried about sponsor. Well, have you won a tournament yet? Have you played? Like,
yeah.
No. The worry about playing the best you can, mm-hmm. right? And then they'll come.
Yeah.
But that's the mental side for me. And I, you know, I'm very thankful. That's how I think.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it's like you win some, you lose some. But at the end of the day, is it the worst thing that could happen? No.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Wow. I, like, need some time to, like, digest that, because that was so good. So, anyway, Misty, you were speaking about, like, during tight situations in a game. So, how do you calm yourself down during, let's say, you're down one set, or, like, it's 14-all in the third set? How do you, what's your mindset during that time?
Well, so, it's funny, because Carrie and I are so yin and yang. So, Carrie was always up, like, she needed to listen to Sade and stuff to bring herself down
mm-hmm.
before matches, because mm-hmm. she... is just going 100 miles, and then I'm like, I could dance around and talk to people, and needed to be brought up, and uh-huh. we understood that. But 14, you know, we trained in all different aspects. So we trained against guys. We trained where we were down in games. We've come back from third set, and we never forgot that. So when we got ourselves in situations, we would be like, okay, we've been here before.
Oh,
right. So you always train for the unexpected.
Yeah.
And so we could honestly say, we've been here before. We know what to do.
Mm.
And, you know, 14-14, yeah, it can be. I mean, World Championships, that second place trophy, I had many opportunities to close out the set, and I just kept doing the same thing. But I took that and learned from it, and definitely didn't happen in London. But that's where you rely on your teammate, you know? Mm. Hey, we got this together. Say what's working, what's not,
mm-hmm.
and just slowing down your breath work, taking it one point at a time. Okay, let's just get the ball back.
Mm. So it goes back to the being patient, like you said.
Being patient and being in the present. Not looking at, oh gosh, if I miss this point, then it's 15, you know, yeah. one, and then what happens? Shank, or I get blocked, or I miss the point.
Uh-huh.
You know? So you have to always kind of be in the now. What's happening at this moment in time?
Yeah, and I think that's actually much harder than said.
Right. So I know until we had the big scoreboard, it's like, I just listened to the rep. Oh, okay, it's a switch boot. 3-4, you know. It's like I never wanted to look at the score.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, okay. So speaking about teammates, right, you and Carrie were like, you know, had such a long and successful partnership, which is maybe something that we don't really see nowadays. But what is like your advice for like a good partnership, long and lasting and successful?
Well, I think because everybody's searching, right? They have one unsuccessful tournament, which for most people could be like, wow, you just got a fit. That's awesome, you know? But to them, it's unsuccessful. And they're like, we need to switch. This is not working.
Oh.
No, you have to go through the ebbs and flows. The game is always gonna keep moving, but you're always gonna go up and down. It's just like training. It's like you're learning something new, you plateau, you might learn some go back down by learning another new skill and then go back up, or you might plateau. For us, we made a couple coaching changes and then it like we learned something new, brought our game up. So there's always things, but communication, respecting each other's differences, I think is key, because Carrie and I were two different people and we had our own different lives. So we didn't spend 24/7 off the court together. When we were, we traveled the world together. Yes, we were together all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But when it was off season or back here training, she had her own set of trainers. I had my own set and it's perfect. It's okay.
Yeah.
And that's where that dedication, the trust and respect have to come into play, because she's got to trust me and respect me enough that I'm getting my stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll bring my best each and every day to the court. Same here.
Oh.
And I think that's what made us very special, because I see a lot of teams, they got to do everything like together. And, you know, it's like a brother or sister marriage. Sometimes you're like, I just want to like triangle a person, you know? So that's why I said it's lonely at the top, because a lot of times, you're going your separate ways, but respecting not only your opponents, but respecting your teammate is key. Trusting them.
Okay.
You know, that trust has to be there.
Mm.
And at the end of the day, that same goal, right?
Yeah. So, like, will you guys sit down and, like, talk about what we want to achieve this season?
We would
season?
Do it. Yeah. So, early in the season, we would write out what we wanted or what we thought. And we'd, every now and then, remind each other.
Oh.
But it wasn't a constant, like, every day. Like, oh, this is... Because you get to the professional level, it's like, you and I, yes, this is what we want. We're going to get there. You know? We're both fighters. We're both competitors. We both want that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do everything in our power to make that happen. We'd set little goals along the way. But definitely, we had a big goal. And we understood that.
Mm. I see. So... how do you deal with losses?
I'm a lot different than Carrie. than Carrie was. But that's why I said, at the end of the day, like, losses to me, I'll go sign autographs, and I'm like, okay, go to my Starbucks or wherever, get a hot coffee, and, you know, it's like, hum-ho. Like, I might be like, what did I do wrong? Or what can I fix? I don't think there was ever a game where I lost and felt like, oh, if I would have only done this better, you know?
Mm.
Yes, of course you want to do things better, but it wasn't because I didn't train hard enough.
Mm.
Yes, I hit a ball out, or I shouldn't have poked that ball. But then that's why you come up short, is to be able to go back to the drawing board and fix what was broken.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the game would be boring if everybody was perfect all the time, right?
Yeah.
No, so it's always going back and, okay, you know, I missed that one serve at this point. How can I get that same feeling back in practice so that I hit that line, or I get it back to that person, or I dig that ball, or but I don't think there was ever a loss where I was like, oh, I wish I would have trained one more day, or because as an athlete, you want to give everything you can, because the worst thing to do is step off the court and say, oh, if I had only.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, it's a sport, right? One winner, one loser, or one person that came up short.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And our game is a game of mistakes, so it's whoever.
True.
You know, eliminates those. But going back to that other question you asked earlier, things could be way worse,
mm-hmm.
right? We're not getting shot at. We still have clothes. We have a home to come back to. You know, thankfully I have family and
yeah,
so things could be a lot worse.
Yeah, I think that takes a lot of pressure off yourself.
You know, it's okay. Yeah. It doesn't define you as a person, doesn't define you as a player.
Wow.
Right? I
mean, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's just the nature of sport.
Yeah, that's true. So, Misty, what has changed most about the game throughout the years? And is there anything that you would like to see in the future evolution of the game?
Well, scoring changed. Because when I started, I started with Holly and it was the big court. You would play indoor.
Oh!
So it was the big court. We didn't have the net serve yet.
Uh-huh.
Till the Olympics. Oh. Then the Olympics, then they initiated the let serve. So everybody was like, oh, what is this let serve? So it was still the big court, though, and it was old school scoring. So you had to serve.
Side out.
Yeah, okay. You had to serve to gain a point. Then when Carrie and I came, the court became shorter, and I jump served. I set with my hands, and then it got to be too tight calling, and I was like, oh, I got so nervous. Then I went to bump setting, and then I stopped jump serving because the court got shorter and just...
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Then it became rally score.
Uh-huh.
So then point for point. Then you had... you still had the let serve.
Mm-hmm.
Still had the let serve. But now everybody's jump floating, right?
Yeah.
Jump floating wasn't really like...
Oh, okay.
Around, yeah.
Oh.
And then you have people running different offenses. The ball, too, became different. It used to be a little bigger. It felt a little bigger, but it used to be a bigger ball and the feel was different. Now it's a smaller ball.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I didn't realize there were so many things that changed.
So... Yeah, so a lot.
And what would you like to see in, like, future evolution?
I don't know. I feel, and this, I mean, goes, this goes with everything. Like, to me, the challenges, I'm like...
You mean the challenge system?
Yeah, I'm like, we didn't have that. Like, is it, you know...
But why, though?
Challenge. probably because we didn't have TV, I don't know. Like,
no, I mean, why are you, like... against it, or
I don't know, it just kind of slows down play. It's like, come on, you know. I think because my dad always said you have to play as if there's a, like, no ref there, right?
Oh,
so you should be beating a team if there's no ref. It shouldn't rely on, like, oh, is this call like good whether you win or lose. But the challenge system to me is still, I'm like, oh man, still a little funky. They've let some setting go, which is better because I like to see more hand setting.
Okay. Being a setter.
Hand setting is an art, and I lost that art, you know, on the beach, because just the feel indoor for me was all wrist. Beach, it's a little more shoulder.
Yeah.
So I like that. They're still running different plays and offense. I don't know. I feel like some of the guys, now the guys will get mad at me, but 8 feet, the net might need to be, I mean, the way these guys are jumping, it's like... Hamol is like over the net. It's crazy.
Yeah, I know.
But they're all great. I love seeing defense being played on the men's side. And I don't know. I think it's evolving the way it should. But I love them hand setting more.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, especially you were a setter, right?
I was a setter, but I put my hands away after I got called a couple, you know, because it just got to be so tight.
Yeah.
So, I wish I would have hand set more. But it is what it is.
Okay. So, you know, you mentioned before in practice and even earlier, you said you're technically only 8 feet and a half, but people always think that you're 6 feet because of the way you carry yourself, right? So, how would you advise other people to cultivate this sort of belief and confidence in themselves?
I think it goes back to my training. Mm-hmm. I was always one of the shorter players, and going back to college, we all had to touch the rim, and I was an outside hitter, and then high jump. So the lifting helped me play bigger. Because as a smaller player, I'm going to get served 99% of the time. I already know that. Being one of the shorter players, I knew that I had to outlast the taller. I mean, I always, even in practice, sometimes I'd hit against Carrie. So that I knew what a 6'4 block, or a 6'3 block, felt like, and how to manipulate it.
Yeah.
But that's, I think, what helped was because of my strength and because I had the skills offensively, it helped me play bigger.
I see. Okay. So what do you think your strengths are, both as an athlete and as a person?
Communication is not one of my strengths. I'm gonna be honest with everyone. Communication is not one of my strengths. Carrie will tell you. My husband will tell you. I think my dedication, my motivation, I'm very focused, and I think my complete game as a player was I was well-rounded, so I understood all the components. I could block, I could hit, I could set, I could serving. Not one of my strengths.
Really?
When I took the jump serve away and then showed her, like, that jump float, learning that, it just wasn't one of my strengths, but I made up for it on the defensive side.
Yeah.
So I think defensively I was strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
But again, my work ethic, and I think the respect I had from the other players.
And I think also one thing, like, from speaking to you, also just the attitude of being in the present moment. I think that definitely helped you a lot.
Yeah, I think so. And not that I don't take life seriously, but you have to find time to laugh at yourself too. You know, you make a mistake, laugh at yourself. Oh man, you know, or it, just enjoy what you're doing.
Nice. So what was the best advice that got you through hard times?
The best advice was what my dad said, you know, play for those that couldn't play. I am fortunate, I am lucky, I am an artist on the court, and I have that ability, and it's like, use it.
Yeah.
So I think that's what helped. It's, things could be, like I said, and I keep going back, things could be a lot worse, right?
Yeah. That's so true. So Misty, what separates the great from the good?
What separates the great from the good, I think, is maybe their goal setting, their mindset. I think the excellent players overshoot. They aim really high with their goals. Good will just set their ceiling, their bar a little lower, you know? But I think showing up every day and performing the best for that day. Whatever you have. It might not be your best day, but whatever you can give for that particular day. Because again, you walk off that court, you leave school, you're not guaranteed another second after that. So for that moment in time, I think the excellent players are very quality, like, care about the quality that's taken, and you know, think about the small details in that moment in time, as opposed to just going through the motions. And I know when I coach you guys, it's like, oh coach, but I got it closer. Okay, that's fine, that's good, but not good enough. Like, get it to that spot. Right? So demanding a little more of yourself. So I think exceptional players will demand a little more from themselves. They're not scared to take it to that nth degree.
So what about, like, you know, you and Carrie were, like, dominant for so many years, and throughout the years, they'll, like you said, every year the target gets bigger and bigger. But what do you think, like, sets your team apart from the rest of the teams?
I think our attention to detail.
Oh.
So making sure we worked on enough reps that that ball gets to a certain location.
Oh.
If it wasn't there, our teammate was there to clean it up.
Oh.
So playing off each other, I think, set us apart. Because not every ball is going to be perfect. Not every pass is going to be perfect. But it's my job to make my player, who's ever standing next to me, better. Right? Take their play and make it better. To give them the best opportunity to be successful, right? So it becomes less about you, it's what can I do for my teammate to make them the best.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we looked. It's like, there was that ball that you were talking about in China. It's like, okay, I ran off the court. I could easily just popped it up right behind me.
True.
No, I'm going to try to get it up there. My teammate is 6'2". I'm going to try to give her the best advantage she can to get them in trouble, right?
Yeah.
And that's what she did. Boop. Played it short.
Yeah.
Right? She had to do limbo, but at least it was, you know, closer to the net than farther away. So that was, I'm going to go, but I'm going to give her the best shot to be successful.
Yeah, so this is what you talked about, like, going through the motions versus, like, thinking, like, purposefully about where you want to place the ball.
Because if I'm just going through the motions, now I can't just turn it on. It's playing how you, what do they say? Play like you're going to play in a game, right? Practice, practice like you're going to play.
Yeah.
I can't go half or just through the motions of practice and then expect to turn it on in a game.
Yeah.
Because why? Maybe that will happen, but now that throws my teammate off because they're like, well, you didn't do that in practice, you know? So I have to play the way that I expect myself to play so Carrie can feed off that.
Okay. Very interesting.
Does that make sense?
You know? It does.
Because if I'm just going through the motions and it's like, oh, I lunged, but then in a tournament I decide to make a different move. Now she's like, whoa, that's you lunged last time, or that's where your pass was last time, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not fair to just go through the motions.
Yeah, so then when it comes to the actual time, then your partner is like seeing something different from you and they have to readjust.
Right, also. Or sometimes you can't turn it on like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's you may think like, oh, I can turn it on in a match, no problem, you know.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't happen that way.
Yeah, that's so true.
So I think whatever, however you are going to compete, that's how you practice. And you have to be very critical of yourself. Ah, my arms, that pass wasn't exactly right.
Yeah.
What can I do to adjust? You know, be very critical of yourself instead of saying, oh, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, pretty good's a lot different than good, or
wow,
that was exactly what I want, you know?
Yeah. So what advice would you give to aspiring volleyball players or athletes listening to this?
Take some time off. Take breaks here and there. I just know a lot of athletes, this season just, it used to be season, preseason, season, off season. Now it's just like one full season. That's what I feel like. So take breaks. Find other hobbies. Get interested in other stuff. It's okay to have two different passions or different things that you are interested in. Study the game. A lot of people will study themselves, and that's fine. And it's hard for other people to analyze their opponents. You know, I'm sure there's girls 18 and under that are like, oh, have you seen Sammy, the best player, you know? No, I'm not going to watch her, like, because you're so in about yourself, right? No, it's like, okay, maybe be a little humble. Yes, I don't have everything I have. Let me go watch this girl and let's see what is different. What? Wow, okay, I see how she moves her feet, or what's so special about her. And I think it's picking apart. You can always gain from different coaches and different insight, like different players. There's so much to gain from that. But you have to be humble enough to be like, you know what, I don't have my setting under control. Who can I go watch that's a good setter?
Yeah, which brings me to like a next question, which is like, so you listen from all the coaches, you watch like different players, like how do you like narrow down what to choose from? You know, I feel like sometimes it's so confusing to navigate around so many different types of advice. And
so I think it, as you get to the professional level, your coaches start to understand you. So they'll coach to your abilities or to your, you know, they understand kind of how you work and what your style is. I think as you're learning, it's, you want to take from different coaches, but everybody's going to have their own style.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it fun, is you need to create your own style, make your play unique. That doesn't mean that you forget to work on your skills, because every skill is the same. It just, you know, how you come into the ball. But once you get your foundation down, your fundamentals, then you can start tweaking them, you know, a little, or adding your little spice, right? Not everything a coach is going to say is correct or not, and that's where you have to kind of filter it and pick apart, like, oh yeah, I see what they're saying. Yep, arms out early. And, you know, some of you may be stuck with a coach for a year or two and they're telling you to do a certain skill. Go, but at the end of the day, you can pick it apart enough to say, yes, I understand. But at the end of the day in the game, they want the W. Right? The coach wants the W.
The dub.
They're not going to be like, oh, hey, by the way, you know, and they'll let you know.
Uh-huh.
But I think there is different aspects you can pick from each coach, and it's that filter. And it gets tough because I don't think you shouldn't have to change your game. And if it's a good coach, they should be able to tweak you here and there a little bit or add things without fully breaking you down. Now, there might be some players, yes, you fully have to break down. But that's where the preseason comes, and that's where you do all your slower work and work on the skills so that when season comes, everybody understands what the style is, what the technique is the coach is asking for, or how that game is going to be played by that certain coach.
Mm-hmm.
So that in season, you're not having to break down, breakdown skill.
Yeah, I think that's where, so far from my experience, a lot of problem comes. It's like, oh, 2 weeks before a tournament, we want to fix this. And then there's no time in this 2 weeks to fix this problem.
Right. So you just work on maybe tweaking one little aspect. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, we're going to focus on this week. We're going to work on getting our hips around or
Yeah.
Or that taking that step out for hitting. Mm-hmm. But if you try to overload too much, that's when I don't understand, and it starts falling off.
Mm-hmm. And have you ever had like the experience of, let's say you learn a skill and then like you think you got it, and then maybe you just sort of forget about it, and then after a while you just feel like, oh, like how come I can't do this anymore?
That's the beauty of our game. It's like golf, you can always get better, and you're always working on every aspect of the game at different times. So there's always going to be learning. When you learn something new, you go down.
Mm-hmm.
And then something happens, it all falls in place, and you start to work back up. That's when you work on a new skill or you add to it, and you're always going to be doing this up and down.
Even at the top.
Yeah. Wow. We still work on passing every day, the minimal pass. We still work on passing every day. Mm-hmm. Very basic. It really comes down to basics and the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. Once you have your fundamentals, the footwork, basics, then you can start adding on.
Mm, I see.
And I would say, too, you young players, I don't care how tall you are, if you're a defender, get up to the net and block sometimes. Make your partner play some defense, because the only way you can get better is if you understand what each position, how they're coming into the ball. That will just make you a better player. And you blockers, you'll start to understand, oh, I see what when they don't take that much line, this is what happened. So
which is what you said about being an all-round player,
right.
Okay, so last question from me before we go to the listeners' questions. Misty, what is the biggest lesson that volleyball has taught you?
The biggest lesson, you guys are gonna get tired of me saying this, circle around. I'll say the biggest lesson is being vulnerable and relying on your team around you for help. Relying on your teammates for help. And that goes relying on your friends, if you're off the court, your family. I don't think there's ever anything maybe you might be ashamed of, or you can't believe this happened, or you're in trouble, that you shouldn't be able to ask for help. And really, it lifts a big weight off your shoulder if you're like, oh, okay, this is going to suck. But, and really open up to the people around you if you need help. It's relying. And that's why you're part of it. That's why I love being part of the team. It's like, if I couldn't get a ball or carry, it's like, I am having the off day passing. I'm just terrible. Let them pump you up. Don't worry. Just put the ball up. I'll be there for you. But that's where they come in and say, no problem, I'm going to take a step over, don't worry about this. Let the people around you help. Ask for help when you need help. I think that's the biggest thing.
And I think especially for like maybe athletes or what, I feel like a lot of people are scared to ask for help. Maybe they feel like, oh, like I can do this on my own, I don't have to.
You put up that front and then you feel like you're on this island. And the island never changes, right? And you're just stuck there, and you try to put it on this front for so long, something's gonna break. right? Something's gonna crack. But if you share it with people, then it becomes less of a problem or issue. And mm-hmm. but I think relying on your teammates around you, and like I said, that's teammates on the court, but then also to your teammates in life, whether it be your husband, your sisters, your brothers, mm-hmm. your family. Ask for help. Be vulnerable. Accept, you know.
Yeah, I think I heard recently somewhere that how do you pronounce that?
Vulnerability.
I can't pronounce it. It's like actually a superpower instead of a weakness, and we should learn to use it more. Which is like what you said. Okay, so now we're gonna move on to questions from the listeners. So some of the listeners have actually posed some really good questions for you. So, was there ever a moment in your career that you doubted if volleyball was your path?
Well, I always had a different passion too. I always liked coaching and teaching. So whether volleyball was successful or not for me, I always had that other passion. That's why I said it's important. Like, you don't have to give up everything to do one thing, you know? Keep, if you're an artist and you like drawing, keep that as your hobby, you know, draw on the weekends and continue to do that, because you just never know what is going to happen. Oh. But I didn't think I'd be an Olympic athlete when I was younger. I wanted to be a veterinarian. So I wanted to take care of animals. So I didn't see myself playing in the Olympics until sophomore year in college when I was a setter. And even then I thought I'd just play indoor. Beach mm-hmm. just came into the Olympics. So I didn't see mm-hmm. myself playing beach.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. So, but everything happens for a reason. I got burnout indoor with the national team and came out to the beach and ended up being the right path. But I still got my master's and still continued into that coaching phase.
Yeah. So speaking about burnout and the indoor, that's a really good question here. How do you deal with volleyball politics and stay focused on becoming a successful athlete?
So politics drove me from the indoor game a little bit, as well as burnout. And I think kids are dealing with politics earlier and earlier in sports with club. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't play for this club, you're not going to play for this high school, and vice versa. That's where I think the parents, too, need to help take a stand. Mm-hmm. And really rally around the kids and understand parents. And again, I'm going to be hated for this. I don't really care. That you are, when you are paying for club, you're paying for the train. You should be paying for the training, not necessarily the playing time, but paying for good training. Now the playing time should fall into place, and we know sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't. If your son or daughter is a multi-sport athlete, then pick a program that will work with that athlete. Let them play the other sports. You know, I don't think 12 years old you should have to pick one sport. But politics is hard, and I think that's just where the parents come into play. You have to just be honest with your kids and say, this is going to happen, and it's not about you, you know? Oh. And just like I said, surround your kids and rally and be advocates in the right frame of mind for them. But if it really becomes a political thing, then maybe that's not the program for you. You know, it should be enjoyable, right? You know,
and yeah, I agree.
You shouldn't have to, oh, if you don't do this, you can't do that. Yeah. No, that's childish.
Yeah.
You know, you have a say when you're paying money, you have a say. I'm not saying, oh, you better play my daughter or else. Yeah. It's like, no, but really club, when I played, and this is why I have a hard time with it, it used to be you were paying for the training. You wanted to be a part of that club because the training was so top notch.
Oh, so you think it's like kind of changed?
That it's, if you sat, we had players that sat behind other players. If you sat behind somebody, it was like you were learning from the best, and yeah. you couldn't wait to get your chance.
Yeah. So. I think the saddest thing about politics is that the players really want to play, but it's the people above them that...
You become a commodity, which is sad, and you shouldn't have to feel like that. You shouldn't have to feel like a pawn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're feeling like that, then... That's what you just reevaluate, maybe what program you're headed to, how you're feeling. And that's why I said, even to when you have a time to take a step back, do something else. Mm. Get your mind off and take a step back.
Okay. So, what is your best pre or post game music, food, ritual, or words of affirmation?
So I had the same playlist in, I can't remember all the songs, but I had the same playlist carrying into all, let's see, I would say 08 and 12.
Mm-hmm.
Same playlist. I found the same iPod. It still worked.
Oh.
So I would always play that. Carrie and I had a video pre-London we would watch to help just get us pumped up. I would eat the same breakfast because, like I said, you know how you feel. And I'm very superstitious too. So I was like, okay, I'd wake up and I'd have the same food in the morning. Find my favorite number. I don't care if it's this thick. I'd 5 strokes of deodorant. Each arm, you know, your hair is pulled back in the same. So for as much as people want to say, oh, I'm not superstitious, we all are.
to a certain degree, yeah.
But yeah, so I eat the same foods a lot of time based on, you know, because my performance, like I just knew how I'd feel. Same playlist and yeah.
What about words of affirmation?
Really? So our coach would always tell us, like, they're here to watch you. You know, they're here to watch you, so go show, you know.
Mm.
But just waking up in the morning and saying, today's a good day, today's gonna be a good day to win, that's all.
I like that. Okay, so what was the biggest mistake in your volleyball career?
Biggest mistake? I think sometimes too, you know, and it quickly eliminated, but you, I think in all sports, you have people sometimes that latch on.
Oh.
Too long, you know, and it's like, okay, yeah, you're not really doing me any good, I'll see you later, you know, so getting rid of the Klingons, but I didn't really have too much of a problem there, but I see that a lot in professionals, like, why do you need to pay for this entourage, the car, for this, you know?
Oh.
Like, yeah, you don't need to do that, what they do. But I think the biggest mistake, there was one tournament, but Holly and I ended up doing well, was in Rosarito. I was getting my hair braided in the back alley, cornrows, before the semifinals, and she couldn't find me. So I just, like, and somebody's like, are you playing in the semi? Yeah, it's happening now. I had to go around the court and then just start warming up.
I think I read that in the book.
So poor Holly, gave her too many gray hairs. It's rookie, you know, problems, like, learning the road for the first time, like, leaving passport, having your mom have to bring it back to the airport, you know, just different things like that. Missing shuttle buses, the usual.
So not really any major mistake that...
I wouldn't say any mistake, just poor learning the ropes.
Yeah, rookie mistakes. So what kept you calm and patient through the difficulties of learning the sport?
I think both my parents kept me pretty grounded. Like I said, it just I had other sports to fall back on. I love soccer and I played tennis.
Mm-hmm.
But to just my parents saying, hey, you're going to learn something new and it's not always going to be your best. That's why I said it's going up and down, but seeing it pay off. So I think it was the people I surrounded myself with that helped me.
Yeah, so the team around you.
The team around. I think building a like-minded team, keeping yourself around like-minded people, if you're headed in, you know, a direction that you want to head into, making sure that the people surrounding you are solid and want what's best for you and always kind of elevating you up in that manner.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And not being distractions or taken away. And I think that's going back to that mistakes. It's like, like learning to maybe eliminate the distractions earlier,
oh,
I think would be...
I see. And yeah, so this question, what is your opinion on discipline versus motivation? Like, do we need a bit of both to succeed or one more than the other? Or if so, what are ways or self-talk that allow you to hold yourself true to it?
Well, I think it's important for your teammates to hold you accountable too. Everybody, and that's, again, the beauty of being part of a team. I don't know, you can have a very motivated person and get out to the court and just go through the motions.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can have a very disciplined person who's like, yes, I'm right on. But then they need somebody saying, like, hey, come on, let's go train, you know?
Oh.
Let's go train. So I think you need a bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
Because one, you have to be motivated to even get out there. But then you got to be disciplined enough to go through the bad and the good and pick apart, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Pick apart your game, but stay on the certain path. So I think there's a little bit of both. Because like I said, you could have a highly motivated person who just doesn't care. When they're out there, it's like, I don't like care. And they're just kind of out there. But hey, I showed up for practice today. It's like, okay, nice.
So that's where the, you know, going through the motions versus attention to detail comes in, right?
I think so, because you're really, even in practice, you're trying to stay one step ahead of your competition.
Yeah.
Right? What are they doing? Okay, I got to be one more step ahead of them. Mm-hmm. Got to be just that much better. Every day I show up to practice, we talk about this at Irvine Valley, 1% better. You're trying to make yourself 1% better, not back, you know, backtracking. As a coach, it always drives us crazy. We think at the end of the week, we're like, wow, this team or these players are really getting it. Mm-hmm. We move them up, and then they forget my dad was like, they forget everything by Monday. Then we got to go backtrack.
What do we move them up?
Sometimes you guys, yep, I'm saying you all, and you know who's out there, will learn something where, like, all of us coaches are like, all right, they're learning this defense. Yeah, they're moving. Uh-huh. They're moving in the right manner. Then we come back Monday, and we're like, we just worked on that all week. Like, what happened? It's like, oh, you guys sometimes backtrack. You forget. Because, you like, once practice is over, you stop thinking about it. It's like, oh, backtrack. So then what do we have to do on Monday? We got to start back again and pick it back up again. So you're never going. You're never moving forward.
It's like, always just down, up, right. Down, up.
That's why we say get 1% better. My dad will always say, cut the ring off. You know, if you learn something new, boom, cut that off so you can only keep progressing as opposed to falling backwards.
Cut the ladder off.
Cut the ladder off. Don't go backwards.
Okay, I like that. Okay, so we're just gonna check if there's any live questions here. Oh, there's a question by Miguel. He's a player from Mexico. He asks you,
hola Miguel,
how many countries have you visited?
Oh gosh, I've had to get like my passport done at least 3 times. So between the visas and just new pages, I've had to get it done 3 times, but I've been all over. I've been to Russia, I've traveled through Korea, been to Mexico, obviously, Switzerland, Spain, all over, Thailand, Australia, so many different places. Definitely I want to go back to.
So when are you going to come to Malaysia?
That's what I want to. Well, I'm just waiting. You need a partner. No, I'll get it.
All right, so I think that's about it for now. Thank you so much, Misty. It's really been a blast to speak to you and share all this knowledge with everyone here who has joined us. Thank you, everyone who has joined us. But before we end this, is there anything else that you would like to add on?
No, just Tosh did a good job. I'm glad I could be her first interview.
Yes, thank you.
So happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you, everyone, for joining us. And
everyone have a great rest of the day, great rest of the year. You guys want to follow me, Misty May?
Yes,
I think Misty May BB.
Yes, Misty May BB on Instagram.
Not that I post that much, but
yeah, that's right. I wanted to ask you. So,
I'm scared.
No. How can our listeners connect and support you? On your journey.
So I still have Facebook that I'll put out every now and then, but Instagram, people will write in and I post every now and then, but Misty May BB.
Yeah.
And then, I think Twitter's coming back. Twitter was like,
I don't even have Twitter. Yeah.
So Twitter's coming back, but I would say everybody's Instagram now. So,
yeah, Instagram. That's the place to find Misty. And follow the Volley Talk podcast. All right. Bye.